Okay, the next matter on calendar is Century Surety Company versus Casino West. It's here on an NRAP 5 certification from the Ninth Circuit. It's case number 60622. Is counsel ready to proceed?
Pardon me. Yes, Your Honor.
And do you want to reserve any time for rebuttal?
I would. 7 minutes. Thank you. Good morning, Your Honors. I'm Doug Barrett, and with me is Debbie Leonard. We're counsel for Century Surety Company. We're here on two certified issues from the Ninth Circuit, two issues of Nevada state law concerning the interpretation of an insurance policy, two particular provisions of an insurance policy. And this case provides the court with a nice situation where it can show how principles of policy interpretation, which the court has articulated, can be used to resolve conundrums that other courts have faced. Two issues here are how do you apply the facts of this claim to a form of pollution exclusion that appears in this policy and to a form of an exclusion which is fairly unique to this policy. Both issues present or have an overlay of I think, two fundamental principles of public policy. One is the reason the court has adopted rules of construction for our contracts is to create some predictability so the parties can enter into contracts and know what they're getting into, know if there's a dispute, how that dispute is likely to be resolved. That applies generally to contracts. And then there's also a notion that's particular to insurance policies, and that is this concept that insurance is designed to spread the risk among policyholders who share the same basket of risks. That's the ultimate goal, and the reason for that is that the participant in that pool of risks is paying the premium for all those risks, and they don't want to have to bear the premium of a risk that their own situation doesn't present. And that's why there are often situations where it may be...
Let me pause you right there, though. I was intrigued by the Scottsdale Indemnity versus Crestwood case that your opposing colleague discusses at length about really the insurance companies with the pollution exclusion are not looking at spreading the risk of carbon monoxide poisoning by a guest due to a motel pool, and they're citing an opinion by Judge Posner. Slightly different facts, but what's your response to that?
I think the court went off on the wrong track in that case, where the court is saying we understand pollution, environmental pollution, is very expensive, and it makes sense to us laymen that an insurance company doesn't want to bear that risk. That's actually not true. There are insurance companies that insure environmental pollution. It's not the magnitude of the risk that scares insurance companies away. It's the desire to spread that risk among policyholders who share that risk, and they bear the commensurate premium for it. So there is a market for pollution policies. But
at a considerably higher premium.
Pardon me?
At a higher premium.
Exactly. You pay the premium for it. We all have homeowners policies. The standard policy doesn't insure jewelry or fine art. And that's because a lot of homeowners don't have expensive jewelry or fine art. And if policies were construed to include coverage for such risks, people would be paying for that even though they don't share that risk. And that's why insurance companies charge a separate premium if you want to insure valuable jewelry or fine art. Same situation is true in commercial general liability policies. The goal is to create a policy that has a basket of risks that applies to everybody that's going to pay that same premium. And if you have a particular risk that isn't shared by that group, you need to negotiate an amendment to that policy, an endorsement, that embraces that additional risk and presumably you're going to pay an additional premium for it.
Counselor, we've been asked to look at this for ambiguity. We've been asked to look at it for coverage as carbon monoxide. But I was struck by the building heater exception clause, because we're dealing with a pool heater. Should we even be concerned with that language as a beginning threshold question? Because a pool heater is used for a different purpose than a building heater, which is used for heating a building.
That's exactly right. And I think this is a key tool for the court in construing this form of pollution exclusion that appears in this policy. As the briefs have made clear, and as the Ninth Circuit mentioned in its certification order, courts around the country are divided on whether the old pollution exclusion applied not only to external environmental contamination, or whether it embraced things like toxic indoor air. The form of the exclusion that's presented here has another element to it, which is an aid for this court to resolve that controversy. And that is because by mentioning indoor air, by mentioning fumes that are generated by equipment used to heat a building, the policy now can only be construed, the exclusion can only be construed as embracing both external environmental pollution and internal pollution. Otherwise, that building heater exception would be surplusage. It would serve no purpose in the policy.
Well, that's why I asked the question at the beginning, which I just kind of feel for your position, but does pool heater even fit into that?
Well, that's right. The building heater exception is an exception to the exclusion. So it would be important for Casino West if the tragedy here had resulted from carbon monoxide emanating from a building heater. But it didn't. So the claim doesn't fall within that exception. And I should note that Casino West mentioned in its briefing a case, I think it was out of the 11th Circuit, Admiral versus Fight, F-E-I-T. And that was a case where the carbon monoxide was generated by a water heater. And it had, the court had before the policy, the same as ours here, that only had an exception for building heaters. And the court said, a water heater isn't a building heater, so even though we might feel sympathy for the insured in this case, we can't fit the facts into that exception. The exception doesn't apply, therefore the claim is excluded. And Casino West mentioned that ISO, the organization that creates policy forms, thereafter developed a new form that has a broader exception that includes building heaters and water heaters. I think that's the 04 version of the policy. This policy was issued after 04. So the parties could have chosen to use the 04 version with an exception for building heaters and water heaters, but it didn't. Well, the parties didn't. They used the 01 form that only has the exception for building heaters. And as Your Honor mentioned, we're dealing here with a pool heater. It's not a building heater, so the exception doesn't apply. And that's why the exclusion bars coverage. And then, of course, there's a whole separate exclusion attached to this policy that provides further evidence of the party's contracting intent, which is not to cover the hazard of toxic indoor air. And when you address that exclusion, you don't even need to worry about where the party is intending only to deal with external environmental pollution, because it says right on its face, we're dealing with indoor air. Casino West's argument with respect to the indoor air exclusion is that it should apply only in certain situations where the cause of the toxic indoor air is due to perhaps a sudden and accidental event. The cause is not a sudden and accidental event. The problem with that argument is that it violates the...
So does the indoor air exclusion take away what the indoor heater exception offers?
It's a very good point, because the building heater exception doesn't give anything. That's an exception to an exclusion, so it just says...
It distinguishes that exclusion in that context, right?
It says this particular exclusion doesn't apply to fumes generated by a building heater. But you have to look elsewhere, you have to look at the whole policy, as this court has said, you read the policy as a whole, giving effect to every provision. And so it's necessary then to, if this had been carbon monoxide generated by a building heater, rather than a pool heater,
right,
then the pollution exclusion wouldn't have been coverage, but you would have still needed to look at the whole policy.
And your answer is the indoor air exclusion would or would not...
Would have applied. Would have barred coverage.
Let's say you had an indoor heater that caused the exact same situation as the pool heater did. Would that be covered or not under this policy?
Not be covered, not because of the pollution exclusion, but because of this separate exclusion. And that's not inconsistent, because the building heater exception isn't a grant of coverage.
You're in your rebuttal time.
I'm sorry, Your Honor. Thank you.
You may continue if you want, but you just...
I'll say nothing.
If it pleases the court, Mr. Galt, I'm Scott Goldenack, the counsel for the respondent in this case, Casino West. What Casino West is asking this court to do in this case isn't something novel, and we're not really breaking new ground here. What we're asking the court to do is to construe and apply the two exclusions in the context of the historical and undisputed intent in this case. And why I say that isn't something new and novel for this court to do is that just a couple of years ago, in the Powell versus Liberty Mutual Insurance Company case that was decided by this court, 127 Nevada 14, it's a 2011 case, the court did basically what we're asking the court to do in this case. Now, that Powell case involved a homeowner's policy that had an earth movement exclusion. And what happened in that case is that the homeowner had an incident where there was a busted pipe, a busted water pipe that saturated the soil around the foundation of the home. The soil expanded and there were consequential damages to the that the earth movement exclusion did not apply. In doing that, what this court did, once again, is exactly what we're asking the court to do in this case. This court first looked at the purpose of the earth movement exclusion. The court didn't look at the exclusion and say, these words are ambiguous, these words are confusing, we don't know what they mean. The court, in the first instance, said, what is the purpose of the earth movement exclusion? And by the way, I should add that before doing that, the court made a couple of important comments about interpreting insurance policies. And one of those was that the question of whether an insurance policy is ambiguous turns on whether it creates reasonable expectations of coverage as drafted. And then the court added, ultimately, the court should interpret an insurance policy to effectuate the reasonable expectations of the insured. So it makes sense when that's the law of insurance policy construction to do what the court did in Powell, and that's look at the purpose of the exclusion.
But it has to be as drafted.
Yes.
In other words,
yes.
So you have to earn your argument out of the words of the exclusions, correct?
Well, again, Your Honor, in the Powell case, the court started with the proposition that, this is why this exclusion was included by insurance companies, and it dovetails with the Posner position. As the court pointed out in the Powell case, insurance companies included an earth movement exclusion to avoid catastrophic events with massive earth movement and widespread damage, because that's an instance where an insurance company cannot calculate what the potential risks are. The very same thing that gave rise to the total pollution exclusion. Total pollution exclusion was designed to address widespread industrial events, traditional environmental contamination. And so that's why the early cases looking at the total pollution exclusion, cases to the state, go back to what the purpose of the exclusion was.
But before you get there, just looking at the language of the pollution exclusion, could you answer your opposing colleague's argument that the wording is not at all ambiguous because B1 makes quite clear that fumes from indoor here would be covered?
So you're talking about the indoor air exclusion?
No, I'm talking about the pollution exclusion, which has an exception to the exclusion saying bodily injury is sustained caused by, you know, this is an exception to the exclusion. It's not an affirmative grant of coverage, as you explained. But to me, that certainly does suggest that the exclusion, but for that exception, would have in fact excluded smoke or fumes from a heater.
Well, a couple of things I meant, Mona. First of all, that's a funny way to clarify an insurance company's intent with a very broad exclusion. What we're going to do is we're going to put a tiny little give back in there, and that should be noticed to consumers all over that anything else that's not in that tiny little give back is considered a pollutant. And it's interesting that Judge Jones, the federal district, of course, this is on certification from the Ninth Circuit. Judge Jones was the district judge in this case, and he dealt with that very point. He said, a reasonable policyholder might not view the exception regarding fumes from the building's heater as an indication that all other possible types of indoor fumes would be excluded as pollutants. And there have always been, well, going back to 1988, there's been an exception to this broader exclusion. It was the hospital fire exclusion. And that said that the exclusion, total pollution exclusion, would not extend to injury caused by heat, smoke, and fumes from a hostile fire. That was in the exclusion. That was an exception to the exclusion going all the way back to 1988. Yet it did not stop courts all across the land from taking the total pollution exclusion and putting it in its historical context. Really, the insurance industry, if it wants to make it clear that the total pollution exclusion is to extend beyond traditional environmental pollution, it should say that. It shouldn't leave its original total pollution exclusion language in effect and then do a couple little give-backs. So that's why the district court kind of brushed aside that argument, and I think that probably was a correct way to approach it. It puts it in the lap of the insurance industry to clarify what it is they're attempting to exclude here.
What about the indoor air exclusion that I understand is sui generis to this policy?
It is.
It's handcrafted.
Yeah.
Can you comment on why that doesn't apply, even if you get by the pollution exclusion?
Sure. On a couple of levels I can. First of all, I think the Powell approach applies to that as well. The indoor air exclusion is kind of a home-drafted, home-created provision that Century Surety developed over time. It's in our brief. We took the deposition of the person responsible for preparing that exclusion, and the essence of his testimony was that exclusion was designed to get to mold, fungi, organic types of situations like that, asbestos and silica. Never in any of the grafting process was there any reference to carbon monoxide emanating from a heating unit. That was never discussed. So once again, you start with the Powell approach of asking what was the purpose of this exclusion. It was never intended to be for the type of event that occurred here. And you let the Century Sureties of the world take what courts have called a MEDACS approach. They throw this hugely broad language out there with one thing in mind, but then when it incidentally comes up where they can apply it in other circumstances, they do. And I think that's the kind of thing courts should not sanction. Also, we have an alternate interpretation of the indoor air exclusion. Mr. Galt's interpretation, his client's interpretation, if this court wants to consider it a reasonable one, there's an equally reasonable one. The indoor air exclusion talks about qualities or characteristics of indoor air. And as we argued before the district court, and the district court accepted, that connotes a sense of an ongoing, continuous situation, not a one-time infiltration of a toxic substance into air that's otherwise not toxic, and otherwise not harmful. So that's an alternative interpretation of the language, and if you've got two reasonable potentials for interpretation of policy language, then the language is construed against the insurer, or against the insurer.
But again, so your point is Could you elaborate on that point? Qualities or characteristics, you're saying that's a continuous state of affairs, that, and so you need sort of a sudden and accidental...
Sure. Yeah, I mean, if you think about that, what the language talks in terms of is qualities or characteristics of indoor air causing harm. And if you've got indoor air that's typically not problematic, there are no qualities or characteristics of it that are toxic or harmful, and there's a one-time incident, which is what, by all evidence in this case, this was. The carbon monoxide levels in that motel room were never able to be recreated, and there was never any complaint about it prior to this situation. So yes, a continuous attribute of the air is our interpretation of that language. Now, Century Shorty says, well, wait a minute, how can that be a proper interpretation? Because the language of the policy says, regardless of cause, that's also part of the exclusion. Well, that just means regardless of what caused that continuous or ongoing attribute of the air.
And your point is, you don't have to convince me that you're right, just that you're reasonable.
My point is that under the decisions of this court, if there are more than one reasonable interpretations of an insurance policy provision, then it's construed against the insurer. But I think, again, taking a step back as I started my argument, I feel that if this court follows the process that was undertaken in the Powell case, you get to the result that Casino West is advocating here. Because in both instances, the exclusions, by history, by language, were never designed to attach to the situation that's involved in this case. And so for those reasons, I would submit that this court should answer no to both certified questions that the Ninth Circuit sent over.
Was there a deposition taken concerning the drafting of the building heater exception?
No. And Your Honor, I might say about that, the building heater exception is part of the insurance services office form. What Century Shorty did here is it took some standardized forms. The insurance services office, ISO, is this entity that creates, among other things, policy forms for policies like this. And so we did not take a deposition of an ISO representative about that one.
But the one that was selected was pre-2004?
The form for this policy
the absolute pollution.
Yes, it was the 2001, I believe, version. Mr. Galt can correct me if I'm wrong, but I believe that's what it was.
In your case law, your opponent says some of your cases are the pre-2001 version of the policy, and therefore they're not applicable. And then you say there's the 2001 that applies, and there's a 2004.
Well, my response to that is this. What Mr. Galt is saying is that many of the cases that Casino West cited interpreted the scope of the total pollution exclusion before that building heater exception to the exclusion was incorporated into the policy. So his argument is, gee, since that exception to the exclusion was incorporated into the policy, it removes all doubt. This exclusion is intended to apply to things other than traditional pollution, traditional environmental pollution. The response to that is that the building heater exception to the exclusion wasn't the first exception to the exclusion incorporated into the policy. In 1988, ISO incorporated the hospital fire exception to the exclusion. And I would venture to guess that every case we've cited was post-1988. The courts weren't convinced and have not been generally convinced that including an exception to an exclusion defines the exclusion as a whole. That has not been a position the courts have been willing to adopt. Otherwise, they would have. Mr. Galt's position would have been sustained many times.
In the cases you cited, was the hostile fire exception argued in the same way that Mr. Galt is arguing the building heater exception? I don't recall that being the case.
I could not tell you that. I mean, I've read the cases as you've read the cases, and courts don't comment on that in most of the cases, or in the cases that I can think of, whether it was argued, I don't know.
Okay.
Okay. Yes, John, and we still have a bit of time, so we don't need to hurry.
Okay.
Your opponent says that you're adding facts that are not in the record when you say that it wasn't sudden and accidental for purposes of the indoor air exclusion. Could you comment on that point? He says that in his brief, not at all argument.
Yeah, I know he says that in his brief. I I think that what his point is actually it's just a century surety inference that the four decedents couldn't have just suddenly died. There wasn't a blast of carbon monoxide into this room, if I'm reading his brief correctly, a blast of carbon monoxide into this room, and then they became deceased from that blast of carbon monoxide. What happened is that a poor maintenance contractor apparently took cardboard and duct tape and put it over the vent of the pool heating unit. This pool heating unit was adjacent to or below the room where these four people were found deceased. And so I think what Mr. Galt is saying is that there had been a process over time where carbon monoxide was emanating from that unit and into the room. So really, it's just semantic. I mean, my point is...
So it's who draws which inference from the record
sure.
facts?
Yeah.
Okay.
And we're not citing any facts that are outside the record. What we've said, and it's part of the record, is that there were no complaints of carbon monoxide infiltration in this room or injury from it prior to this incident. There were regulatory folks all over that room after this tragic incident. No one could recreate what happened here. And so what we're saying is, when you look at that indoor air explosion, this really is a one-time event. It's not a continuous, ongoing attribute of that room. Okay? Thank you very much.
Thank you.
With respect to your question about the hospital fire exception, I do recall a case, unfortunately I don't have the name off the top of my head, where the court did discuss that, apparently the parties argued it, and the court said that doesn't help us construe this exclusion because there can be hospital fires outdoors. So it doesn't make clear that it was intended to cover indoors. The building heater exception can't be, there's no way to say that applies, that that's ambiguous, and that there would be injury caused by a fumes emanating from a building heater outdoors. So the only reasonable construction of the 01 version of the absolute pollution exclusion, which has the indoor building heater exception, is that the exclusion as a whole must be intended to embrace indoor and outdoor contamination. And I wanted to address the toxic indoor air exclusion, the separate exclusion. The parties agree the Powell case is very useful in resolving the issues. The Powell case is important because it says we're dealing with particular language before us, but we recognize that insurance policies can have other versions of, in that case, the soil subsidence exclusion. And the court specifically said, if we are aware of versions of the exclusion that say soil subsidence regardless of cause, and if that had been the version of the exclusion before us, we would have had no problem applying it in this situation where it was soil subsidence caused by a leaking pipe. Well, that's what we have in the indoor air exclusion. We have that precise language, regardless of cause. And although there is extrinsic evidence that Casino West introduced about the drafting of that exclusion, and it's true that if the genesis of it was concerned about mold, that extrinsic evidence also shows that the company decided they wanted to embrace every possible source of toxic air inside a building. And that's why, ultimately, the exclusion applies not just to mold and mildew, but also to the toxic qualities or characteristics of indoor air regardless of cause, period. And it's pretty hard to say that carbon monoxide in a room is not a toxic characteristic of the air in that room. Casino West is struggling mightily to figure out a solution to this problem, and it's come up with this idea, well, what the exclusion really wants to deal with is ongoing, continuous, not sudden and accidental. But those words aren't in this exclusion. And this court has said we aren't going to write into a policy words that aren't there to create a bargain that was not the bargaining party's intended to strike. The evidence of the party's intent is the contract itself. And this contract doesn't say we will cover toxic indoor air if it occurs once or twice or suddenly. It says we do not cover injury caused by toxic indoor air regardless of cause. I just want to conclude by remarking that we're dealing with two exclusions. Each one operates independently. And if the pollution exclusion applies, that solves the coverage question here. If the indoor air exclusion applies, that solves the coverage question here. They don't need to both apply. And it's not inconsistent to have one apply and not the other. That's why the policy was endorsed, to provide further clarification of what the underwriting intent was. If anyone has any questions, otherwise, thank you very much.
Thank you, counsel. Thank you for your briefs and argument. We'll be in recess until 11:30.